Welcome to The Sync Report, the intersection between filmmakers, content creators, and musicians, where we host a weekly conversation with some of the biggest names in film, television, music, and entertainment. Meet industry experts and top-level musicians as we pull the curtain back on music placement and scores, building vital relationships and providing real opportunities for our listeners. Listen to indie filmmakers and content creators present their latest productions and describe specific scenes as they consider music submitted by our audience. Hosted by film star and musician Colin O'Donoghue and his co-host, the godmother of independent films, Rose Ganguza, and The Sync Report's creator and music supervisor, Jason P. Rothwell. Don't forget, tell your friends about us and remember to rate, comment and subscribe to The Sync Report on Apple and across all platforms. Music is the difference between a good film and a great one.
Welcome to The Sync Report.
Thank you, Milfredo and Willow, for that lovely introduction, and welcome to The Sync Report.
Hi, Paula.
Hi.
How are
you? I'm okay, thanks. How are you?
I'm very happy now that I hear that gorgeous voice.
You're welcome.
What have you been up to? Did you have any museums, galleries? How are they? The kids are back in school now, yeah?
They are. And then there's one starting nursery on Monday.
Willow, how's Willow doing?
She's fine. She doesn't want to go to the nursery.
By the way, you know my new best friend's a guy named Andy.
Oh, I saw. he wants to talk to you about his film ideas.
Oh, I can't wait to get him on stage. He's brilliant. And yeah, what a talent. My God, his graph. I mean, I only know from his graphics, but yeah, I'm excited to talk with him.
He is. Yeah. He's got a crazy imagination.
Excellent. Who do we have tonight? I think I'm excited.
I think so too. Today we have Sean Hurwitz on the show.
Oh my God, I love this guy.
Do you want to hear a bit about him?
Oh yeah, tell us.
Sean is a multi-talented musician, producer and songwriter whose interest in playing guitar started after he saw the character Marty McFly rock out in Back to the Future. Right. We all remember that scene, right? Sean is based in Los Angeles. He's a consummate professional known for his attention to detail and ability to bring a perfect polish to any performance. He is an outstanding performer who has co-written, produced, recorded, played and toured the world with top artists such as Enrique Iglesias, Smash Mouth and Gin Blossoms, Chris Wallace, Ferris, Judith Hill and many more. In addition to being a live musician, since 2007, Sean has also written, produced and recorded hundreds and hundreds of songs that are constantly being licensed to TV, film and radio use worldwide.
I'm gobsmacked about this guy. You know, he's actually a new friend and I just find him so fascinating. You know, obviously this guy is like one of the top hired guns in the music scene, going out with huge artists that you've just named. But I was fascinated talking with him earlier this week as he was talking about his life in Israel, his goals to be a professional museum, you know, his natural born business savvy. I mean, this guy, he dropped out of school at 16 and he's one of the most savvy business brains I've actually had a chance to talk to recently. Plus, of course, his original music and, you know, how this guy's mastered the formula for cues for film and TV. You are going to learn so much from this guy, Paula. I know you're writing songs all the time for film and TV.
Absolutely. What's going on, guys? By the way, I just emailed you. I want to get on that mailing list, please.
Oh, we've already stuck you on. I thought that'd be a fun song to start with. That's my buddy, actually, Jack Manis. He used to write with Sublime. Let's brighten things up because we have a true star joining us today. Sean Hurwitz, welcome to our humble stage. Thank you so much for joining us. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to this conversation. How are you today, my friend?
Thanks for having me, brother. I am doing good. I'm actually quite sleepy in Los Angeles right now. It's 11 in the morning. Early however, for you. I had a late night. I had a show last night at the Viper Room with a new artist that I'm working with, and then we stayed up for a long time. So it's been a while.
Well, thank you. Have a double dose of that tea, and we're going to get you buzzing from this conversation. We'll get your juices flowing, as they say.
Awesome.
Yeah, we got a long road that we're going to cover. Your journey is actually incredible, and we're going to rewind way to the back. Let's hear some of Sean's music. I mean, we had to play something from Sean just so you understand the mastery of this man. But we're going to take him way back to the early days. We're going to Israel. Tell us what it was like to grow up in Israel.
I just want to mention real quick that was what's called, for those of you who don't know, that's a cue. And that's why you heard one motif throughout the whole cue that was changing different things. And that's what, for the most part, is my experience. Music supervisors are looking for in cues. And we're going to get into that a little later. Right? Well,
exactly what you're here for. And yes. And you have mastered the format. I mean, the formula is like, yeah, we're good, but we're not getting into that until the end of this conversation.
Right. Just a little sneak peek, I guess. So yeah, Israel, what do we want to know? Born and raised, parents from New York, they moved to Israel, wanted to have a family. And they did. I'm first born, and I left there when I was 23. I probably skipped a few things. So what would you like to know about what I just skipped?
So I want to talk of like pre-16, right? What are you listening to? What's happening in Israel at the time? How did you, you know, when did you first pick up the guitar and start realizing? Because it seems like, I think your mother's a doctor. You know, it seems like you come from a very business family. So I'm curious as how you, obviously we know about the Marty McFly moment, but there must have been something else that triggered. So what are you listening to in those early years?
Well, yeah, man. So I was listening to, even prior to that, I was listening to what my parents were listening to, as we all do, I guess, which was Clapton, Hendrix, Beatles, Floyd. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I was listening to from my parents. Then, you're asking a good question. In 90, I want to say in 1991, during the first Gulf War, that's also the time, maybe it was 92, sometime in that range, where we finally got more than two channels in Israel on TV. We finally got cable, and we had MTV Europe. That's when my whole world exploded musically. Michael Jackson, Black or White, that was a huge one for me. Bon Jovi was another huge, I mean, that was my whole adolescence. My whole teen years was all about Bon Jovi, Richie Sambora. Just, man, MTV Europe blew my mind.
Oh, wow. So you started with keys. That's so interesting. Tell me, how did you go from keys to guitar? Was there some kind of aha moment where you wanted to switch instruments?
Well, prior to that, I was listening to a lot of Israeli music. It was on the radio, which I played keys at the time, so I was focusing on a different instrument. But once I saw Marty McFly, once I saw MTV Europe, when I saw, I'm watching Keep the Faith, Bon Jovi. By the way, for me, that was the first time ever hearing Bon Jovi. I did not know they had a whole 10, 11 years, maybe even 12 years of career before that. I was there for the comeback, for Keep the Faith. And watching that video, for those of you who know what I'm talking about, watching them walking down, I believe, Jersey streets, and Richie Sambora taking that solo with his clear, like, see-through guitar, I was like, yes, this is what I need to do. I need to do this. So I moved from keys to guitar.
Were your parents not happy that you were leaning into music?
No, not at all. My parents, they were the ones, I had asked my father when I was 10 or 11 to teach me a few chords on the guitar, and he did, and it really hurt my fingers, and that's when I stopped.
So your dad's a player.
They both are. My mom's favorite song to sing to me when I was young was Puff the Magic Dragon. I did not understand it at the time, but two hippie parents, it makes sense now. As an adult, I get it.
Incredible. Wow. Actually, you know, let's take a quick pause because we're talking about Sean's early years.
Milfredo.
Let's hear that Chuck Berry tune that might have helped Sean realize he wants to play guitar. Okay, come on. So, Sean, what?
Yes.
Images. What's your mind's eye seeing as you hear that song?
The scene that Michael J. Fox plays on, and I think if I'm not mistaken, he actually played that. At least that's what I heard. Maybe I'm wrong.
I tried to find that version with him singing, but I wasn't aware he actually was playing guitar. That's so cool.
I believe so.
I love it. Excellent. Well, I had to play that. Just, you know, it's a favorite of mine. And honestly, it kind of sums up who you are. You know, you are that guitar slinging badass, but we're going to get into that later. So now we're talking to a 16-year-old Sean, and he realizes, you know what? Music's not for me. We're living in Israel. And oh gosh, you know, every young person in Israel needs to serve time in the Israeli army. And you actually meet with the army and they agree with you, you should be pursuing something else. Can you just tell me that story?
I mean, we all have to go through the process. There's not much to say. I have terrible eyesight. I had terrible knees. The only thing I was going to end up doing, like I have three younger brothers that were all fighters, and I was down to be a fighter, but with my profile, when they check everything, I was literally going to be sitting in an office for three years. And that's just something that I was just like, this is probably not for me. And they agreed. They agreed. So I went ahead and I went ahead and studied audio engineering instead for 2 years.
That decision must have really been a huge move for you and the direction that you're now in.
Yeah, I just felt like, one way or another, I'm very goal-oriented. I knew where I wanted to be. I knew that one way or another, I was going to be in and around music. It turned out that I ended up doing exactly what I wanted. I'm a lucky guy. But even if I just ended up working as a music supervisor or just being a tech at a radio station, I would have been fine with that. I just love the whole entertainment industry, and I knew that at a very young age.
So, and then at what point did you like pack your bags and decide you're moving to LA?
So I want to say around my 20s, I want to say 20 or 21, the second Intifada started, which is a very bloody situation in the Middle East between the Israelis and the Palestinians and Israel. Well, not really Palestinians and Israelis. The terrorist groups within the Palestinians, Hamas and the Israelis. And Hamas, Fatah. Yeah, very scary. Buses blowing up left and right, people blowing up left and right. I was just having a conversation about that yesterday. And there was a specific incident which I can get into, but for time's sake, let's not, unless you really want me to. There was a specific guy that blew up somewhere, and I was just like, I need to get out of here now before some dude blows my arm off, and I'll never know if I could have, you know, made it in America. I wanted to go for years, but I was like, I was always not ready.
I don't think anybody in our audience can grasp that kind of decision-making, that kind of motivation. I mean, wow.
For years, I was like, because of my parents, I have an American citizenship, and I was very, I knew that I would end up in America to give it a shot. I just didn't feel ready for years. I wasn't fast enough. I knew that I was I wasn't fast enough. I wasn't musical enough. I wasn't ready in my mind. And that specific moment, I was driving down my car, listening to the news as this terrorist attack was unfolding. And I was just like, okay, I need to get out of here and at least give it a shot. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but I need to go.
Amazing. And so you decide to move to LA, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you really didn't know anybody in Los Angeles. Maybe you had some distant relatives that you had never talked to, I think, but really you were dropped yourself into LA just on the motivation to be in LA and to start to network in a territory you knew you could grow. Were you scared? What were those anxieties like on the plane heading to LA?
I don't get very anxious. I'm very goal-oriented, very driven. So I'm not going to say I wasn't, I didn't have concerns, but that's exactly the word. I'm a guy that has concerns. I don't get worried. I'm just aware. I'm aware that's my
problem solver.
Yes. I keep myself aware of everything, but nothing really scares me. In a fight or flight situation, I'm usually the fight and let's go head on. And that's how it was here. I came here with a goal. I literally landed. There was my distant relatives. I didn't even know I had them. I didn't even realize I had them here until like a half a year later when I finally met them. But when I came here, there was one family that I knew. I stayed with them for a couple of days, and that was it. But the first day that I landed, went to their house, took a shower, put something in my face, some food, and went and got a recycler magazine. Back in the day, I went and got a magazine and was looking for a car, was looking for a place to live, and was looking for a job, literally within hours of landing. Like I said, I'm very goal-oriented. That was the goal. There's no time to waste.
Incredible. Everybody that's listening, please go ahead and raise your hand. We're going to start to bring some people up. If you want to talk to Sean, you got a question for him at the end of his interview. We definitely want to hear from you guys. Sean is more than happy to answer any questions. So incredible. So now we're in LA, and your first gig in LA is at the Guitar Center.
Yeah, that was my only, my first and only legit job in America. I worked at GC, Sherman Oaks, store 116, for those of you who've ever worked in the Guitar Center.
Know it well, on Ventura Boulevard.
Yeah. I worked there and for 3.5 years. I kind of made my way from the floor sales to department manager to assistant manager to the store manager. And then I was in GC Pro. I was a logistics manager.
Incredible. And so I'm assuming at this time, you're just like, at nighttime when you're not working, you're just hitting all the spots. You're, the clubs on Sunset, maybe Kibitz Room on Fairfax, trying to network and meet musicians.
Guitar Center, and first of all, Guitar Center, my day job, was the perfect breeding ground for networking and buying gear with very good price. Jason Crane, the manager at the time that hired me, he would always say, look guys, you're on a sales force. I know you all want to be rock stars out there touring the world, but this is a great opportunity. Use this as a vehicle to get to where you want. And I absolutely took his words to heart.
What a cool boss. And
yeah, he was very, very great attitude, everything. I learned a lot from him. And really, I just took advantage of meeting people, because you're supposed to talk to people. You're not just supposed to say, hey, can I help you buy some strings? You're supposed to say, when someone comes and wants strings, you're supposed to say, what do you use them for? What do you have?
Who are you bumping into at Guitar Center?
I mean, first of all, everyone. It's Guitar Center, Sherman Oaks on Ventura Boulevard. I'm bumping into Joe Walsh. I'm bumping into Doyle Bromhall. I'm just naming out guitarists. But Jesus, I ran into everyone there. It's amazing. Like, someone walks in, and you're just like, I know that. Oh shit, that's blah blah blah. So you definitely run into a lot of people.
So you do have relationships in New York, not so much in L.A. First off, what was this decision between New York and L.A.? Why did you choose L.A.? And second, what was happening when you landed in L.A. musically? It seems like around the time where it was like Nirvana and a lot of grunge. But, from your musical influences, you're listening to more rock and pop stuff. Did you fit into the scene?
Well, that's a very good question. It was more pop oriented here. And that's one of the reasons why I came to LA instead of New York. I have a lot of family in New York. As I mentioned, my parents are from there. All their families, I've got a bunch of relatives there. But my decision to come here was based on the fact that I felt like New York was more of a jazz scene, and I'm a rock guy. That's what I love. So yeah, so I came here based on that. The fact that there was a lot of rock, maybe not grunge that much, but man, you can find everything in LA. It's beautiful. Everything these days, from pop to trap to rock to jazz, they've got everything here. There's a niche for everyone.
Oh, you're making me miss home. Oh. All right. So as an intro into this next segment,
Milfredo,
let's play that Smash Mouth song. We got to hear this track. So at some point, Sean, you bumped into an extremely famous drummer. Can you tell the backstory there?
One of the guys that I bumped into here was Randy Cook, which is from Canada. I think he moved here around 2005. And I saw him at a show at the Key Club back in the day when it existed here, and was completely blown away. Made it a goal of mine to make friends with him, which I did, and made it a goal of mine to play with him, which I did. And then years later, in 2011, since you played the song, I'm assuming that's where we're going. In 2011, there was a tour for the troops in Iraq and Kuwait. And for whatever reason, Greg Camp, the original guitarist and writer in Smash Mouth, he couldn't do it or whatever it was. And I got the call. Randy called me up and said, "Hey, are you available for 3 weeks?" It's like, yes, because when Randy calls, I'm available. And that's it. Next thing you know, 5 days later, I was on my way to Kuwait to play seven army bases or seven military bases.
So wait a second. You had 5 days to learn the entire Smash Mouth set?
No, I had 3 days to learn the entire Smash Mouth set, because the fourth day I went over it with Randy. We just went over it in his rehearsal room, just to make sure that I've got all the little parts, the intros and outros. And then next day we were on a flight.
Oh my God. So 3 days, what is going through your mind when you realize you have 72 hours to prepare this 2 hour set?
Yeah, sure. You probably can tell by now that I don't really have any emotions. I don't, like I said, I don't get stressed. I get methodical. So I listened to a track, so I would go one by one. I would listen to a track. I had all the tracks in front of me, 23 tracks, I believe. I would listen to a track from the album. Then I would listen to it live on YouTube and just make sure that I know, are they playing it in the same key? And what parts, obviously, if anyone here is a guitarist, you probably know that there are many, many guitar parts in songs. So I would listen to which one of the guitar parts were, which guitar parts were played in which parts. And then I would learn them and play them, and then do that again for the next song. And just go one by one until I had 23 down. And then they already gave me a set list order. So I just practiced, once I knew all of them, I practiced from beginning to end about 150 times, just as much as I could. I was up about 21 hours a day working just on this. It's an hour and a half set that you have to learn.
Completely. Now, and you know what I loved when we were doing our, you know, our pre-interview conversation, your entire approach. And you had said, you know, look, I'm here to play that song for the audience. I want to make it exactly as they love it, as they know it. And I just find that incredible for somebody. And again, before we started talking, I had no idea about your solo and songwriting capability, the cues that you're making, the songs that you're producing and recording and writing. So I'm just wondering how you were able to make that division in your mind from a songwriter and a producer to actually, you know, I'm going to use that term, hired gun, you know, and I don't use it lightly, because there are very few people in our scene that these huge bands will bring on to be part of their band. And that's a huge thing. So please tell our audience that your process and your understanding the importance of that position.
As you mentioned, I'm a stickler for details, and that's where the audio engineering part of me really, and producing really comes into play when I'm out there, when Enrique Iglesias, not him, but his team calls me and says, hey, we'd love to audition you. And then when I got the gig, well, actually, we didn't mention Enrique yet, but let me touch on that because that was the case. Unlike with Smash Mouth, I had a good, I want to say 3 weeks to learn his hour and a half set. And it really is a matter, when I get a gig, it's all a matter of nailing the part. If I come in and no one even notices that it's me because I sound exactly like the guitarist before me, to me, I've done the job perfectly. If someone comes to me and just says, dude, that was great. I don't have any, that was perfect. I've done my job perfectly. And unlike coming in and when we discussed, I said, many gigs don't want you to come in when you're subbing or when you're coming in and auditioning. They don't want you to come in and do you. They want you to do what they need. So that's where I come in with, like I said, with my audio engineering background. And I can hear how much compression is done. I can hear the drive amount. I can hear the delay amount and the delay feedback and the verb and the type of verb. I can hear what all the effects they're using. I make everything the right levels. It really comes into play at that point.
And honestly, I really believe that this approach, that this understanding that you have naturally is why you've been able to actually master the sync side, the cue side of music making. And before I tap into that conversation,
Milfredo,
can we hear Starts with a Melody, please? So here you are writing and producing music for obviously artists that you're connecting with. And again, even as a music supervisor, I'm like, ugh, it's syncable. But you're not even thinking about this, are you? What's the story behind this track?
Well, this track, the artist is Glenna. And if you want to look her up, it's GLNNA on Spotify. She's doing amazing right now. 120 monthly listeners. She's doing quite well. My co-writers, Louis Yolen and Stefan Litt for that track and Glenna, Louis found her and was sort of managing her. She was still underage at the time, brought her to Stefan and myself. We were business partners at the time, had a studio together. And that was one song out of, I want to say 12 songs that we did. We did an album for her. And so I produced all of that. I played all the instruments, did all the background vocals, except for the drums. Stefan is a drummer. He did the drums, did an amazing job on that. And that's it. So we did it for her as an artist. We didn't do it necessarily for sync, although at that point I'd probably been in the sync world 6-7 years, but we didn't it for that.
But that song ended up getting placed, didn't it?
Many of her songs got placed. That song ended up getting placed in Europe on an Orange commercial. I don't know how many people here know what Orange is. If you're not from Europe, you don't know. It's like
the big cell phone company. Yeah,
huge. Yeah, it's like the equivalent of AT&T in America. Yeah, it was a really cool placement.
Incredible. So is it at this point, you're now actually, probably capturing the attention of industry executives. And I think you have a friend at Taxi that kind of gave you some tips about cues for films.
So long story short, I did this and other stuff 2006 to 2014. Then I got burnt out. I listened to my body and my mind and just took a step away. And then eventually in 2017, sold my whole catalog. So I don't even own a share of this song anymore. Of Starts With a Melody, the one that you played. I sold my whole catalog, bought some real estate, rental property. And then met Michael Laskow, my friend from Taxi Music. And he eventually did an episode, Taxi TV, with me. If you look it up on YouTube, I'm sure it's like Sean Hurwitz, Taxi TV. And before this episode that we did together, he kind of, we were talking, just like you and I did, like a pre-interview interview. And I told him that I got, he's like, why did you get burnt out? And I said, man, I was writing like 12 songs a year. I would write it with an artist. I would write it and then with a writing group. And then I would go into the studio and produce it because I was a producer. And then I would spend anywhere from 60 to 80 hours on it between touring. So that means like I'm spending a month or more on a track. And I was like, man, I just got burnt out on it. And he said, yeah, you're doing it wrong. He says, and I said, okay, I'm all ears. He says, I've got friends of mine or you know, clients of Taxi that he knows that are making six figures that have a quarter of my knowledge, a quarter of my experience, a quarter of my gear and my talent. And they're making six figures from royalties. And I was like, okay, keep going. I'm listening. I'm all ears. I'm always looking to learn. And he said, yeah, they spend 5 hours on a track. So there's a formula to it. There's a formula to what different music supervisors want. And that's it. You don't have to spend 60 to 80 hours on this track. It's what you need. And you can speak to it as a music supervisor. You're looking for, sometimes a song like this starts with a melody, captures that feeling. But if you can capture that feeling with an instrumental track that's a minute and a half long, you're good. You don't need, it doesn't need to sound like it's going to be on the radio today or in 6 months. It just needs to capture an emotion. And the track, for some of you that were here before and listened to the first track that they played of mine, that sinister-y kind of feeling vibe, that's it. It's a specific vibe and emotion and feel that a track has. And you do that with a specific formula for the whole track. And when you're done, you move on to a different track. And it's as simple as that. And it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game too. So I was making 12 tracks at the time a year. My goal now is 200 a year. I've never hit 200 a year, but that's the goal.
Amazing. Milfredo, do we have another sample of one of Sean's instrumental? Yes, you have mastered the formula for a cue. I think this is actually really an important topic and moment in this conversation. I know everyone in the audience is trying to figure this out, trying to figure out, you know, is there a formula, Sean? Is there a formula for these type of placements?
There is, but I will give you a little, the caveat before that is that every music supervisor and library, the library's work music supervisors, if you don't know the music supervisor, they have their own thing that they like. They're artists in their own way. And that's why they get hired. Music supervisors get hired for a show because a director likes their art, the way they put music in. So each music supervisor will have their own formula that they're looking for. However, from my experience, like I said, you have to have a consistent vibe in a cue being an instrumental, minute and a half to 2.5 minute long music thing, right? musical cue. And it really is about keeping that vibe. If you're going from your A part to your B part and it's like a bridge, it's completely different, they're not going to know what to do with that. But to get to the formula, I'll just give you these basics. First of all, you may or may not have heard it in the one that we just played, but it builds and there's a consistency, but things keep building and building and building, and then they break down to a B section. So everything's like an A section, and then there's a B section, which is the same emotion, but a different spin on it, and then go back to the A section and ended with a boom, right? Ended with a stinger. So some things to keep in mind for the formula are bar that, like every 4 to 8 bars, add something. It's an ABA format. Make sure you have edit points. If you can, edit points being certain between these 8 bars and these 8 bars, create, maybe it's just some drum fill or something somewhere where the music supervisor has an easy, he's like, okay, I like this. I like the section at 30 seconds, but how do I get into it? I need to make it easy for him as a composer and a producer. I need to make it easy for him or her, the music supervisor, to have an edit point where they can just go, let me take this and put it right here. Perfect. So edit points, and always end with a stinger or a sting. People call it different things, which is an actual ending. If you just end it on a fade, they can't use that. They need an ending, a bow. They need an ending so they could place that wherever they want to kind of wrap up the moment and move on to the next scene. So you have to help them with that, because that's, you need to help them have an easy job. If you do that, you'll have a lot more success in the placements.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's the thing, is listening to that last track and the first track that we played, you're actually, close your eyes and I could see scenes. You're writing a movie out of music, so you feel that growth, the crescendo, the drops, the emotion. I just, you truly, Sean, you've mastered it, and it's beautiful, and I honestly can't wait to be hitting you up for tons of music, man.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, no, really exciting. So look, for a second, before we wrap up, I know we brought a couple people on stage, some real influential people in our little clubhouse world and in the music industry. I brought Rachel up, and Eric, and Tommy, who has like ears made from gold. So I wanted to make an introduction to you, because they should all know you. And yeah,
thank you.
If any of the three have anything they'd like to contribute or add to the conversation, please feel free to unmic and jump at any time.
You know, I think this is the first time Rachel may have heard Rachel, which brought me into this.
That's how I know you. Yeah.
I think this is the first time she may have heard anything that I've ever done. Is that right, Rachel?
I mean, not anything you've ever done. maybe, I guess. But yeah, it was really great to hear your work, Sean, and really great to hear the stories that you're telling, some of the insight that you're talking about in Sync. Really impressed with your work. And it's also comforting to hear in that type of format, ABA. It just seems a lot easier than I thought, you know, just keeping consistent. The tips that you gave us were pretty straightforward. So I think that that's very reachable for indie artists, as long as we keep working at it. And I'm happy this is happening, Jason and Sean. Really glad you're both connected.
Yeah, thank you, Rachel. Yeah, Rachel has an incredible room, a great community. Eric, I see you flashing. Do you have something to say for Sean?
Yeah. Hey, Sean, this was just awesome. I appreciated the way you explained your story and how you got into Sync, and just the whole process behind it. As somebody else who also came through Taxi, it was really cool to hear you talk of that perspective and just really break down the process of instrumental cues. And a lot of people, I think you shared a lot of great insights with people in terms of just the way to think about it, and the structures and the four measures and the button endings and all that. Like, it's just such valuable information. So I really appreciate you sharing the info, and just glad to be chatting with you.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Hey, Sean. So, you know, Eric is, I mean, amazing songwriter, and he has a group called Control Club here on Clubhouse that gives, I mean, incredible insights. They also, you know, his co-host, Steph Fink, is brilliant and constantly working as a music supervisor and producer for films and animated TV. And yeah, an incredible group. We've also welcomed Vessi. Actually, we have some big news for Vessi coming up. Vessi, unmic, say hello. I think you might have a question. You want to say hello to Sean?
Hi, Jason. Hi, Sean.
Hey.
You're amazing. I loved everything I heard. I had a quick question for you, and I love Smash Mouth, Jim Blossom. And my one question is, what inspired your Sinister Vibe track that was played earlier for us? I'm very interested in that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what a great question. So there are two ways that I get inspired. One is I just here I'm going to sleep and I have this idea in my mind. Let me just record it real quick on my phone. And then the next morning I will wake up and get to work. The other way, if I don't have anything specific on my mind, is I will turn on I would ask my wife, because she watches some good shows with good music and she's always got that in her mind. She's loves listening to music, so she's always paying attention to it. And I'll say, what shows should I watch? And she'll tell me what shows, and I'll just sit here in the studio and start a show. And as soon as I see a scene and hear some kind of maybe a beat that inspires me, I stop and I get to work. And then I basically write my own version of what I would put in that scene. So specifically for that song, that Sinister thing, I have no idea. My current catalog, I think I have about 1,300 works on BMI. So I have a few tracks. I don't know which one inspired that track, but
I was terrified.
Good.
The visuals, didn't it? It was really powerful.
Yeah, it was like Friday the 13th kind of Jason vibes. I was like, oh my gosh, this is, but it wasn't. It was like something totally unique, but
Thank you.
Really love it.
Thank you.
And I that's a great question, Vess, because I love what, you know, your response, Sean, because it is the research and homework is important. Study what's being used, what's being successful, what the director and music supervisors are leaning into. Yeah, wise words. Thank you.
Yeah, and again, let me just point out, this is something that I take with me into the live shows and the studio and with anyone. If I can make your job easier, that is my goal. So whether it's being on this podcast, anything I can do to help make this easy for everyone, that's my goal. When I'm working live, anything I can do to help my guitar tech to make his or her life easier, in this case it's his, if I can make his life easier, great, because then he can make my life easier on stage. And that goes for everything, including music supervisors. If there's anything that I can do, you need a little button ending, got it. You need some edit points, got it. Anything else I can do to make your job easier and choose me and choose my work, you got it.
So guys, you hear what he's saying, you know, leave the fucking ego at the door and get in and collaborate, you know what you're doing, know who you're doing it with, and what's the end game. If you're just making music because you love your own music, fantastic and God bless you, but don't bother me. It's really factual. I know, like, sometimes I need stems from musicians and the panic, you know, it's like, no, you can't, it's already mixed and mastered, you can't change. And if, like, I can't change it, then I'm not going to keep the director happy and I'm going to fail at my job. And I'm not going to fail at my job because you can't see the bigger picture.
Right.
And I think this is one of the biggest things that people can take away from what you're saying.
You just mentioned before the research, what's going to fit scenes, what does a music supervisor want, all that stuff. But there's also the ending. When I'm done with a song, I'm not done with it. I just mixed the first version. Now I have to bounce the drums and bass version, the drums and bass submix. I have to bounce the mix without the lead. I have to bounce the mix without any vocals. Because again, when you come to me and say, dude, I love this track. Do you have a version with just the acoustic guitar and the keys? Yes, I do. It's ready to go. Let me send it to you right now.
Incredible. So guys, I just want everyone to know, on my stage, in the audience, Sean's been doing this incredible, which I've been watching lately, YouTube series, giving such knowledge and insights. Sean, where do we find your YouTube page? Can you tell us just a little bit about started making these hundreds of videos?
Absolutely. Thanks for mentioning that. It's everything that I'm mentioning here and more. If you just go to YouTube and look up Sean Hurwitz, you'll find me. But it's also youtube.com/C/Sean Hurwitz Music. But just look up my name, you'll find me. And it's, for me, the reason why I'm doing that, the reason why I started it, was for years now I've looked for a way to give back to the next few generations of musicians. I want to help people be more knowledgeable about taking it from your bedroom, practicing scales, to the stage, to the sync world. I want to help people understand licensing. I want to help people understand what to watch out for, what to go for, how to audition the first time you're on a tour bus, what to not do and what to do. So all of that stuff and a lot more is on my YouTube page. Obviously, would be wonderful if you followed me. But even if you don't, go enjoy some free knowledge, because that's what I'm trying to get to people.
And it is. It's better knowledge from someone who's more skilled and experienced. Sadly, our hour is up. It makes me so sad every time with these interviews. It's like we just don't have enough time. Sean, I hope you're going to come back and visit us and tell us more. Keep us updated. I know you're about to hit the road. Maybe you want to just mention when the tour kicks off and where people can catch you.
Just SeanHurwitz.com. If you go to the shows, future shows there, it'll show you where we're going to be. But you'll find some stuff there. You can see the map, can see the shows and where we're going to be. And if anyone's out there, my natural tendency is I would love to meet you and shake your hand. That being said, with COVID being, you know, what it is, I will most likely say hi to you from afar, but please come and say hi.
So cool, Sean. All right, before we let you go, I want to spin my favorite of your covers. Let's see if anybody, I'm sure Tommy knows what this song is. Give me the Book of Love, yeah?
Wonder, wonder who wrote the Book of Love?
So fun. Probably like you, I can remember as a very young kid dancing with my mom to that song. So yeah, incredible. Look, Sean, we have a couple more people who've joined the stage before, you know, we move on to the sync opportunities and close this segment. Let's just, Mark, why don't you unmic, give us an introduction. Do you have a question for Sean tonight?
Hi, guys. I just came on to say hi, and I didn't really have a question, but Sean, I'm definitely... have enjoyed your advice, especially in the trailer world. That's somewhere where I'm just starting to dip my toes into. And it's inspiring, man. I really appreciate that. Appreciate everything you said today. And I've been looking forward to this room for a while, and it has not disappointed. Jason, you're the man. I mean, I love all you guys, man. I see so many people that I see every day now and on here, and it's great with helping each other get there. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, brother. Nice.
Thank you, Mark. And I see Scott Tyler. How's it going? Welcome to the stage. Nice to see you.
Scott Taylor. He was with me with Enrique.
Oh, you're kidding. Hey. Incredible.
Yeah. Yes, so figured I couldn't help but hop in here and love my boy Sean here, because he is such a boss and a true inspiration for me. And when Sean entered the band when I was on tour, I was the DJ for Enrique Iglesias. And man, when I first met this guy, I knew there was some magic to him, because he was working and flowing on a whole nother level that I didn't really get to experience up close. Like, I can't even explain it, bro. You're just such an inspiration. I appreciate you. And
thank you, bro.
Like,
thank
on you. The real, on not just the music tip, but on a life, like, just, I guess, way of being kind of tip. You truly inspired me and helped me change and helped me with the tour, you know? At times, like, we are truly become family when you tour out there, and I appreciate you being part of my family.
Likewise, buddy. Thank you.
Oh, I love that, Scott. Thank you for sharing that with us and being on stage. Oh, yes, definitely. Lots of applause. Everybody clap. I'm going to clap. That's beautiful. I mean, really, this is what we're talking about, you know, building relationships and networking, not burning bridges, showing up on time, being professional, getting rid of the ego, and making great music. I mean, I don't think there's any other show we've done sums up those points better than this conversation with you today, Sean. Thank you so much, Sean.
You just summed it up perfectly, man. Touche. Well done.
Hey, come on. They didn't give me this job for nothing.
Woo!
Stretch your legs. Be happy. We're going to play this by Kimo the Blaxican.
There you go.
Hey guys.
Hey Jace.
Hey Jason. You okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Just buried in paperwork.
Oh, for the sync report.
Not this time. Move me no mountain.
That indie film you're music supervising?
Yeah.
Sounds like a great project. What's the problem?
It's a brilliant film and we're building a great soundtrack, but you can't imagine how much paperwork I deal with for these films.
Have you heard of Sync Lodge?
First, you got to draft up the sync request forms.
I've heard of Sync Lodge.
Then drafting and issuing contracts.
Yep, Sync Lodge is great, Paula. It does everything a music supervisor needs.
Then deliver the cue sheet. It never ends.
Doesn't Sync Lodge do all of that automatically?
Sweat Lodge? What are you guys banging on about? I got real issues I'm sharing with you guys.
Yeah, lots of issues.
We're trying to tell you, Jason. Sync Lodge is a new platform for music supervisors. It helps you to source the music, sync songs against scenes, draft up sync requests, and even creates the cue sheets once you've locked in the music to the film.
Whoa, Sync Lodge does all that?
It's true, Jason. I just started using it for the sync report. And it's not only saving time, but it's so easy to use, I'm actually enjoying the work.
You guys are the best. Sync Lodge sounds amazing and exactly what I need for music supervising. Why am I always the last one to hear about these things?
I've been telling you about Sync Lodge for weeks.
Don't feel bad, Edge, for not telling me sooner. I know you're busy. You're a good guy.
Paula, is my mic on? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear, Edge.
Guys, what's the name of that program again?
Sync Lodge.
That is something to scream about. Yes, you too can be cool like Edge and use cutting edge technology to help you with your film and TV productions. No matter if you're a music supervisor, director, producer, editor, save time and increase proficiency with Sync Lodge.
I need to find a new gig.
Sync opportunities, sync opportunities.
Welcome to the Sync Report. Thank you, everybody, for showing up as usual. It's going to be a fun show. Really cool stuff going on. Of course, you know, Sync Session Sundays. We're going to be listening to your music tonight, trying to find holiday, winter holiday music for the Sync Report's winter holiday extravaganza. So, excellent. You know, look, we've been saying hello to some of the team, but let's say a quick hellos and then let's get into some listening, some music. I'm excited. I got some good music to listen to. All right. First and foremost, Paula Flack. How's it going? We got half our team is in France right now. It's so exciting.
I am here. We made it finally after an epic, epic journey again.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like you don't know that route. Paula.
Honestly, the two times that the Eurotunnel balls up, we seem to have been traveling to France that day. So a journey that was meant to take us 7 hours took 18 in the end. Those we arrived, kids. We drove overnight and got here at 5 o'clock this morning.
Oh, God. I feel nauseous just listening.
So Where are you?
We're just in Brittany. We haven't even traveled south, Finks. We just traveled west.
You're way up there. Yeah.
We are. But it's lovely.
Brittany.
Britain.
The Britain of France.
I don't know. I can't remember how to speak French anymore.
Britannia.
COVID's ruined my French.
Oh, no. Well, I'm glad you're able to join in, Paula. Thank you. I hope that this is just, the holiday is just beginning. You're there now. I saw some photos. I'm quite jealous.
That wasn't even the nicest beach.
Hey, don't rub it in. Don't rub it in, sweetheart.
I'll send you more tomorrow.
Oh, dude, send me them from the topless beaches, though.
There are, I think, a few nudist beaches around here. Do you want me to head there tomorrow? And
well, you know, that's where I do hang out. You know,
I'm not sure it's necessarily a pleasant experience. To be honest,
oh my god, I just can't imagine being naked on a sandy beach. It just sounds painful to me, to be honest.
Yes, a little bit scratchy.
Yeah, that's just not good. Not good at all. Well, and the other part of our team who's having the time of his life, Kevin Sharpley. My God, you are on fire this weekend. I've been loving watching the social media. How is it going with this amazing event that you are not just hosting and chairing and producing and starring in? My goodness, there is no rest in your house.
Yeah, I was a little bit late because I finally had a chance to rest. So yeah, it was, yeah, big bonanza. My nonprofit co-sponsors the event, and I'm the chair of the advisory committee for the event. I hosted panels. I was on panels. And then, you know, we also had guests for my other podcast that I hope to have as guests for the Sync Report, actually.
Very exciting. There's lots of behind-the-scenes Sync Report networking going on.
A lot of action. So exciting stuff for the Sync Report. Lots of connections, lots of activity, lots of people excited about our network show.
And now I want to say hello to Vinks. And, you know, again, I'm going to love each and every one of you guys up. Vinks, this is all becoming real.
I'm so excited, Jason. I'm so excited. Not only that, we got our first sponsor for the wine sponsor from Sir Dark. Wow. For the Sync Report retreat in France in November.
Incredible!
So I can't believe it. I don't even drink that much, but that's a lot of bubbly. So it's gonna be. I was so proud and happy about that, and I just thank you so much for helping to secure the filmmakers that are going to be asking and giving direction and briefs for everybody to create while we're there together at thank the you. Slumber party. I guess you could call it.
Oh my, and what a slumber party that is going to be, Vinks. This is just, it's incredible. And that's the thing. It's not only what we're doing internally here with the Sync Report, but our panel is just created by these amazing innovators within this music world that are helping to connect the dots. And yeah, we are so pleased to have you, Vinks, and just cannot wait to see you as his avatar. That is going to be a lot of fun. And of course, I've been working with Phil Mason. We're doing this holiday extravaganza, so you got to have a song and dance number, right, Phil?
Exactly. Yeah, I think we're going to be probably calling on a few people to add some extra little bits of musicality to the whole thing as well, because it is going to be an extravaganza, which is going to pad out the Christmas show, I believe, and it's going to be great. It's already starting to sound pretty cool, so excited to be taking care of that. Great, great fun.
Yeah, Phil, it's great because, Phil has come in as a, first he was part of the, just the community, then became part of the team, helping us with Foley, helping us with music supervising, putting music that he created into the show. And now Phil has stepped into the MD position and is actually creating this amazing melody of holiday songs, which is going to help us tell this crazy story that we've written for that moment. Hi, Jody. Yeah, I'm doing great. It's Sunday. I'm so excited to be back with my people. This is really exciting. We didn't have our team meet. There's been so much going on. I kind of feel like I'm jonesing. I need my people. So this is exciting for me.
Me too. It's all so exciting, and I just can't wait for what's to come.
And of course, the spectacular, the beautiful, the multi-talented Heather Rangers. How's it going, woman?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, can you tell? I'm on fire tonight. I'm feeling it.
You're always on fire.
Well, mostly it's fake, but tonight I'm faking it again. No, it's fun. Oh, no, we're on fire. I'm loving it. I'm excited. We're packing the room tonight. It's exciting. I think we have some actually really cool Christmas songs to listen to. But now we are going to talk about the Sync Report, the holiday special, and getting your music into the show. Who's our first victim, Paula?
Our first, I want to choose another word, but I'm completely brain dead.
Genius songwriter?
Genius songwriter. Put the words in my mouth. is Binks, who we've had on the show before, and we're playing her song Christmas in Summer.
Well, apropos.
Spin it, Wilfredo.
Just like the movies, we'll imagine the snow outside, and I'll pretend I believe you when you said you saw a sleigh sweep the midnight sky. The lights above you and me at the beach, they're sparkling, sparkling. Play my favorite song, by Sleigh, Dance with Me, and we'll have Christmas in summer. Forget about our problems, have a brand new start. Presents don't mean anything if I'm not where you are. Christmas is where you are. So we'll have Christmas in summer while they're cozy in. Chocolate and a fireplace will be soaking wet from crystal blue waters tangled in thousand memories. The lights above you and me at the beach, they're sparkling, sparkling. Play my favorite song, by Sleigh, Dance with Me, and we'll have Christmas in summer. Forget about our problems, have a brand new start. Presents don't mean anything if I'm not where you are. problems have a brand new start. Heaven isn't anywhere if I'm not where you are.
What a cute song.
Hello, sorry, yes, I just had a trouble unmuting myself. Hello, Vinks and Jason, thank you so, so much for having me.
Give me a little background. What inspired it? What is the message behind a summer Christmas?
Yeah, so I'm from South Africa, and so I've lived there my whole life, and Christmas always takes place in summer for me. So my whole life, we always had Christmas in summer. So it consisted of swimming in the pool and we would have brides. So we would be outside and we'd go to the beach and we'd drive down the streets and see all the lights, like swimming in the pool. And so summer was always like Christmas time for me. And so now when I'm living in the States, I live in Los Angeles, and because it's pretty warm here still, it still kind of feels like I have Christmas in summer. So that's pretty much the inspiration. Summer was always like Christmas time for me. So now when I'm living in the States, I live in Los Angeles, and because it's pretty warm here still, it's still kind of
yeah, like a bro.
You, the one thing, it's like a brew, don't forget.
Like a brew, yeah. I lived in South Africa, actually.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah. It's been a while. I lived in Joburg and I lived in Cape Town.
Okay, so. I always say that Joburg is kind of like the New York, and then Cape Town's kind of like LA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, Cape Town has a quaint feel as well, but it has a lot of different pockets of a lot of different things. So
totally, yeah, that's
yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I really miss it. Nice hike up Table Mountain to see the two bodies of water meeting, and you know, the clouds all around, and yeah. So that is that song, though. I mean, it really does represent, you know, that the beauty of that place, of Cape Town, of South Africa. And I live in Miami now, so it is Christmas in the summer for sure. Certainly that song hits home. I really love that. My head was bopping to the song, I can tell you that much. And so, you know, bopping to Christmas. And I can tell you, I love having Christmas songs at this time because it's been unbelievably hot all around the world, to be honest. So this is perfect for Christmas music. At least you can feel cool inside. And that song gives you all of that, you know?
I'm with you, Kev.
Come on, let's go and play.
Okay, so I'm loving tonight. This is so much fun. What'd you think, Vinks?
Well, I got to tell you, it's a very Christmas song. It just depends on the story that goes with it. But dude is clearly an accountant who works in the office all the time. He's got an offshore account, Grand Cayman Islands or whatever. So he's just walking down the street with his stupid-looking socks and his whole thing. He's like excited because tonight might be that magical night where he can get that girl in the mail department, and he knows what's going to happen every Christmas party time. He's got to get prepared for it. So he's got to get some new, fresh, clean drawers, and he's ready to go.
Absolutely brilliant. That is, honestly, Vinks, I think that's one of my favorite. That was the best. That was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Lionel!
Hey!
I loved it. I loved the production. I loved the instrumentation. It was very fresh to me for a holiday song.
And I loved Vinks' story about it. That I was laughing when he was saying that. That's so funny.
He's a genius.
Yeah,
he's
genius. That's really genius.
It's so funny because it's
not exactly the inspiration, though.
So tell us, what was the inspiration? Thank you.
Well, my wife co-wrote it with me, right? And she loves going on holidays, and it was written in the wintertime in January or February. And she was going, I really need a holiday. And she was sort of down and out. So I said, well, let's write a song. We have an evening time. So we started doing this. By the end of the evening, we had the song and she was happy. She was bubbly. And then I took it to the band and we recorded it. But it was just for the idea of just, yeah, you and I really need to get away. And she says that to me sometimes. I just got to get away. We need a holiday.
So I really heard the Cayman Islands in there.
You took us all on a holiday with that track. It was lovely. Hold up. Who's next?
Sorry, I was just trying to remember what brand of port I drink at Christmas, because it's making me want some.
Where's?
I'm glad you added the tea to that.
Right, so next up we have March by Mr. Tyler Larson. Spin it, Wilfredo.
Like I'm at Disneyland.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's like the ice parade in the Mall of America in Minnesota, in Minneapolis, you know, where they have all the characters are in parade and everybody's doing the thing in a circle, and there's like three black people out of 5,000, and it's just perfect music for that scene.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Excellent. I'm with you 100%, Vinks. Tyler, say hello, introduce yourself, and give us a little background on on that fun bit of music.
Hey guys, my name is Tyler. I'm from Des Moines, Iowa. Yeah, I make classical electronic interpretations. That's all everything that was there. I mean, it's from the Nutcracker Ballet. And I spent 4 years going through the original orchestral score and swapping out the orchestral instruments for those classic sounding synthesizers. But everything that you're hearing is straight from the sheet music. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Excellent. So what'd you think, Kev?
Yeah, I loved it. I felt like I was in a video game. Actually, like,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
dude. Tron, yes.
Yeah, it's a Tron Christmas, exactly.
That's all I mean, those 8-bit sounds, Kevin, from the 80s, that's what it is, yeah.
That's what it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, first of all, we got to have that song. I mean, that song is a digital Atari Metaverse Christmas, so.
I could see Twiggy going nutso with his whole face lighting up.
Yeah, he's bouncing around. Yeah, I could see the little pong going back and forth with Christmas trees back and forth in his face. Yeah. We gotta have that song, man. That was a lot of fun. Talk about something else that's unique and different.
Thank you.
We might have to make a video game specifically for that. Nice one, Tyler.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Des Moines. Fantastic. I love it. I love it. I love it. Excellent. Excellent. Oh, my God. What an amazing show. It's gone so fast again. And yet, thank you, everybody, for the submissions. I hope that you'll continue to keep sending, because like I said, we need so much music now. And then we will be bringing in some new exciting sync opportunities for the TV show. Not just for the TV show, but we'll be in the TV show for other film and TV productions outside of the TV show. So, yeah, keep joining us. If you're not signed up to the mailing list, be sure, you know, email us at tsrsyncs@gmail.com. And that's how you'll get the briefs every week. And, yeah. What an incredible show. What an incredible cast. Remember, have fun. Enjoy yourself. Stay creative. Come back again next Sunday. We're going to do it all again.
I'll be in tow.
Good night, folks.
Good night,
Dorothy.
Love, love, love.
Good night, Jim Bob.
Good night, John Bob.
Good night.
Look at the size of that thing.
Oh, no.
Whose hand is that?
Oh, thanks.
The Sync Report cast will be back in a week with your hosts, Rose Ganguza, Jason P. Rothberg, and me, Colin O'Donoghue. Until next time, take care and be kind.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next week.
Today's episode was produced by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Paula Flack, and Robert Capadonna. It was written by Jason P. Rothberg, Kevin Sharpley, Lisa Dunn, and Paula Flack. Editing was by Jason P. Rothberg, Milfredo Seven, Paula Flack, Edgar Edge Kamei, and Adam McNamara. Research by Lisa Dunn. Graphic design by Jody Lynn Talevi. Brought to you by Zavatar.